This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Amherst College has named a new president. She is Carolyn Martin. She will be the first woman and the first openly gay president of the college. Martin is currently the chancellor of the University of Wisconsin at Madison, and her tenure there has been marked by bold thinking and political controversy. We talked about it when we recently spoke with Martin, but we began our conversation a little further back to why she devoted her pre-administrative academic life to a study of German literature.
Well, that's a great question. I started out studying East German literature, but I eventually went back to the Freud circle and worked on a figure by the name of Lou Andreas Salome, who was a writer, a novelist, and a lay analyst who wrote about psychoanalysis.
A powerful field of inquiry, which I'm sure comes in handy when you have to navigate the personalities and psychologies of leadership in academia.
That's hilarious. It doesn't hurt to have an interest in psychology.
You were named chancellor of University of Wisconsin at Madison in 2008, so not all that long ago, and you've had quite a ride there.
Everyone in Wisconsin's had quite a ride.
So, I mean, let's just dive right into that. First, not long after you were named chancellor, you raised some eyebrows and got some attention when it was revealed that you worked closely with the governor of Wisconsin about possibly splitting off Madison from the University of Wisconsin system. Now, what was the goal of that, and why were you a champion of that idea?
Interesting. Well, actually, I worked very closely with the former governor of Wisconsin, Jim Doyle, my first 2 years there. And it was only this past year, when Scott Walker became governor, that the idea of splitting from the system arose. I had been for what must now be 18 months promoting the idea that UW-Madison and actually all the campuses in the UW system needed more flexibility and autonomy from state regulation. As you can imagine, when only 17% of the revenue for a research university like Madison comes from the state, it's very difficult to operate when the state has 100% of the control. So the idea was, let's recognize that Madison in particular is a hybrid of funding sources and that it needs more of its constituents to play a role in the governance of the institution than simply the legislature of the state. And when Governor Walker became the governor, he proposed that we try to achieve it by splitting Madison from the system in the form of a public authority. That then created a firestorm.
The entire notion that a university's or state organization's autonomy or level of autonomy should be judged by the percentage of funding that it actually gets from the state. I mean, that seems to be a direct challenge to the whole concept of a state school, a state university.
Well, the decline in support from the states to public education is a challenge to the whole idea of state-supported institutions. There are such enormous challenges to public education. For research universities in particular, the rest of the world is working to establish major research universities to some great degree on the American model. And what that means, as I saw firsthand when I traveled to China the past 2 times, is that we are going to be vying for talent with the rest of the world. So this entire initiative was meant not as a departure from the state or a way of serving the state less well, but actually serving the state of Wisconsin better.
While we could talk for quite a while about just this issue, because it's a pretty bold one, other noteworthy events happened while the chancellor at UW-Madison, and the one which people may be familiar with was that there was a professor of history at the university who wrote a blog post in the middle of the very contentious union debates that were happening in Madison. He wrote a post, this professor, that was pretty critical of conservative thought and influence in the state house there in Wisconsin. Then a member of the Republican Party in Wisconsin made a public records request for all of this professor's emails. So that sparked a pretty intense debate about whether or not this was intimidation, the roles of the role of academics when it comes to these very heated political debates. Do you feel like that was intimidation by that Republican politician?
I think it could have had a chilling effect on the kinds of exchanges and the formation of ideas that are characteristic of academic work. And that's why I took a strong stand that we were not simply going to turn over the email of Bill Cronin, who is one of our finest and most responsible faculty members. That came at a very interesting time because those people who were upset that I was working with a Republican governor on restructuring the university system worried that I would not stand up to this request for private emails. I think what interested me about this entire set of events was the partisanship and the polarization in the state and in the country, which meant that there were strict lines and an all-or-nothing mentality that suggested it was not appropriate for a university chancellor to work with a Republican governor. And on the other side, the assumption that if I were going to cooperate on one issue, I should therefore be willing to cooperate on all issues. This is a way of thinking that seems to prevail in the country at the moment that I think is extremely dangerous and which was disheartening to me.
Is that one of the reasons why you ultimately decided to leave Wisconsin, that it had become at least there? I mean, I know you're speaking nationally, but you had sensed very viscerally there how polarized things had become and you just didn't want to deal with it anymore.
Well, you know what? It's very, it's hard to say all the things that went into the decision. By far, the most important was the appeal of Amherst. And so it was a very compelling opportunity. It came at a time when things in Wisconsin are difficult, but I don't have the illusion that Wisconsin is alone.
Hmm. Well, you are coming to Amherst, and Amherst has this very long and storied tradition. Parts of it only recently got the development that it deserves insofar as it used to be an all-male institution and only began admitting women in the 1970s. And now, as of 2011, you are the first woman to head Amherst College. So what do you think that says about the college's development as an institution itself?
Interesting question. I think it's obvious, given the commitment they've made over the past 10 years or more to diversifying the student body and the faculty, it's in a sense probably just another indication of their desire to change, to adapt, to open themselves up, to be both the great liberal arts college they've always been with the academic rigor and some of the traditions that have made it so wonderful, but also to change. And that is the best you get in an institution, I would say, that is an honoring of the best in their traditions and an openness to transforming what needs to change with changing times.
Well, you are history-making at Amherst for a number of reasons, not just by virtue of being the first woman to head the college, but also the first gay academic leader at the college and one of the few openly gay heads of higher education across the United States. So from that perspective, how has the world of higher education, as you've seen it, changed for gay academics over time?
Well, as is true of the culture generally, things have opened up, and yet we still have a very long way to go. As you say, there are not that many openly gay leaders in universities or in other positions in the society. But given that I grew up in what was then a rural part of Virginia, the changes really are profound from the 60s to today. You make the very good point that I think a lot of academics laugh about ourselves, and that is that the reputation of faculties at colleges and universities is that they're politically liberal to too great an extent, according to those who are worried about that fact. But institutionally, often very conservative. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of change that needs to occur before we could have someone, I suppose like me, who becomes a president of a college where it's not a story one way or the other, whether they're a woman or openly gay. It's not that salient for me, as you can imagine, since it's simply a matter of who I am.
Not
but
that salient.
I have.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, the fact that I'm a woman is, or that I'm gay. These are things that have been aspects of my life for a very long time, that are somewhat self-evident to me. What I would want to say, however, since I've gotten quite a number of emails and messages from people about how crucial it is for the culture at Amherst and for them personally, is this: if having me or anyone else, any other woman or any other gay person, get these positions and occupy them and do well at them is helpful to others who worry that there's what might be called a glass ceiling or worse for them, despite their abilities and their aspirations, then that makes me happy, even though it's not what's primary for me.
There's one last question I want to ask you, because I am so fascinated by the fact that you're a scholar of Salome and Freud's circle.
Yes.
Because, I mean, here was a group of people who were intensely studying the potential of the human mind and consciousness. So I wonder, based on your studies, when you look at the collective consciousness of America right now, do you feel that the country is risking a failure of imagination?
I guess I would have to say yes to some degree, or as one of the faculty members at Madison wrote in a very interesting blog, an historian of American foreign policy, I think we risk a failure to support leadership of a sort that takes risks and understands, in a broad sense, the need for transformation. And that's a bad sign, and something about which I think a lot of the American public is worried.
Well, Carolyn Martin, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Well, I've enjoyed it, too. Thank you very much for your interest.
Carolyn Martin is the next president of Amherst College. There's more information about her at radioboston.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.